Sources. The first book we use will be, it's called The Prayer of Samantabhadra, and I'll spell it for you. This prayer in the Kangyur and in the Tengyur, it's actually in both, and it's, so it comes from very early Buddhism, 9500 BC. And this prayer is in 9500 BC. And this prayer is the basis for all later presentations of how to prepare for a meditation session. Not how to meditate, but how to get ready for a meditation session. What you have to do before a meditation session for it to be successful. And that's the first major subject that we'll study, which is the how to prepare for a meditation session. There are certain things you have to do before you sit down that make it more... that make your meditation much more successful. If you don't do them, it's very difficult to have a good meditation session. And this is taught by the Buddha. This is 500 BC. So those, we're going to go through those, the prayer of Samantabhadra. And in that prayer, he presents the preliminaries, what you have to do before meditation. We're going to do that according to Tsongkhapa. Tsongkhapa wrote a commentary to it. I think Tsongkhapa is... I have to check with him. He was a Kagyu. He studied with the great Sakya teacher in Bali. And he's a Nyingma also. And later, Gelugpas came from him. But he wasn't a Gelugpa in that sense. He was the first. But he wasn't a Gelugpa in that sense. He was the first. So... which is on your syllabus. And there's something we call the seven ingredients. It's also called the seven limb practice. And those two are what you need to get ready for a meditation session. There are six activities that you do before the meditation. And part of one of them involves seven steps. So that's how you're going to get ready for a meditation session. You have to do those to have a successful meditation. You can't just plop down and meditate. You have to gear yourself up. These are the things that get your mind, they disengage your mind from your office and get your mind to meditation. There still has to be some gap there where you change gears. And these function to do that. The second part of the practice of the study of meditation will be the physical, a study of the physical circumstances you need, the physical environment you need to step to do it. Meditation is an instrument or a tool, or a microscope for focusing the mind, and then you must have a meaningful object. It's not that you just try to empty your mind. We'll get into that. There are results of that meditation, and that is a specific non-Buddhist meditation. And it leads to certain apparently desirable results, but we'll talk about why it's not very desirable. So they had a debate. The way you settled a philosophical or a religious debate in the old days, and that's when debating was serious. I mean, you would have a contest in public, and other masters and the king of the country would attend. And whoever was, after like 2 or 3 weeks of public debate each day, the king and his board of advisors would select the winner. And if you lost, you had to join the school of the winner. And all your followers had to change religions. So it was very serious. And Kamala Shiva won. And it's called Huashang Tawa. The viewpoint that you should meditate on nothing was expelled from Tibet. That teaching was not allowed in Tibet. They had one other famous debate of the same kind about which monk's system, which monk's vows system should be followed. There were different systems of denial. And the school that went out was a certain Savastivada, which is now prevalent in Thailand and other countries. So we followed the same rules. That's the custom that was prescribed for Tibet. And that's the oldest system of India. So in meditation, we follow Mahayana. As far as our monk's system, we are pure Hinayana. Our vows and everything are pure Hinayana. So that's Kamala Shiva.
Was it part of Huashang's
belief?
Belief or doctrine that instant illuminated it?
I don't know. I have not heard that. I haven't heard that he believed in Satori or something. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. That he
taught
instant illumination.
I haven't heard that. I don't know at all.
So that wasn't part of that whole debate?
I haven't seen it. There are Western scholars who believe the debate went into place. But we say it did. And it's always quoted. But I could check it for you in the computer. Literally.
It says something great.
Yeah, no, I can see if in 30,000 pages it's mentioned. I doubt it. And I can check. So that would be, what are we on now? The first was preparing. The second was the place, you know, the physical place where you're supposed to meditate. Third was how you arrange your body, how you get your body ready. And then you can guess what the fourth one is. How you get your mind, you know, what you actually meditate on. Okay. And in there we're going to have three steps. The first step is called the five problems of meditation. These are five typical mental states that come up in your mind while you're trying to meditate. And you have to learn to identify them. They are the classic tricks that your mind plays on you when you're trying to meditate. They're like the five, we call them the five problems of meditation. There are five. You know, since 2,500 years ago, people who meditated had the same five problems come up. They come up in a certain order. They're very predictable. People have spent their lives studying this, meditating, and they have made this list. And these are the five typical problems that you get while you're trying to meditate. Then there are what we call the eight corrections. And these are eight different actions that you take to stop the five problems, to block the five problems. So it's very useful. What you're doing is you're like reading the car repair manual before you try to fix the car. It's very good. It's very useful. Then while you're meditating, the problem comes, and you already know what you're supposed to do. So that's very useful. And meditation is only a tool. Meditation is not by itself an end. It has no benefit religiously, spiritually. By itself. It has to be focused on a meaningful outcome. By itself, it has temporary side effects that make you calm or something, but they have no meaning spiritually. They will not remove your suffering. They will not advance you in any way, meaningfully. It has to be focused on something very meaningful. So the last 2 weeks we'll cover meaningful objects for meditation. So we'll discuss the object of meditation. What are you going to aim this powerful tool at? Because if it's just a powerful tool that you're not aiming at anything, it's useless. It has no benefit. So you've got five steps. I'll pick on people. Robin, first one?
Preparation.
Yeah. Faith, second one. And,
study of the physical environment.
Yeah. You know, what should the place be like where you're going to meditate? Right?
Yeah, how is your body going to be when you get into meditation? Janet, Gautam, Diamond.
What you actually meditate on.
No. Gautam was the mental state. Okay? See, the first three are the first is preparation. The second is the place.
What to meditate on,
you said. Yeah, you have it.
For four?
Yeah. Four, yes.
Just the mental state.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I'll go over that again. First is the preliminary, the preparation. What do you do before you go into your meditation? Secondly is the environment, right? Third is the physical posture. How do you sit? Fourth is the mental states that are going on. The mental, what do you call it?
Process.
One is the physical. Number three is the physical postures. And then number four is the mind states you go through.
Mental activity.
Is technique included in there?
You could say it's the mental technique, yeah. It's the problems that come up, how you stop them. Good Buddhism, and Buddhism in general, has a lot of words for meditation. And I thought I would go through a short list of them. This is on your homework, okay? Because you're going to hear lots of different kinds of words. The words in English are not finalized yet. And you're going to read books about Buddhism, and they're going to have all meditative equipoise, mental quiescence. There's a lot of six-syllable words, I think. And what are the differences? You know, what are they? So I thought I would just give you, these are not debate definitions. They're not monastic textbook definitions. But I'll give you the general gist of each different concept, because there are many ideas. There are many words in Buddhism for meditation. Like in Russian, K. Merrick is good on that. It's like 20 words for foggy, dark, unpleasant, moody. I mean, there's all these words for dark, and you know, I had to study it in college, and I didn't like the language. There's 100 words for dim, dark, foggy. And Buddhism is different. Buddhism has 100 words for mind. 1,000 words for compassion, many different words for meditation. So it's good if you know the difference between those words. You'll hear them thrown around. People throw around samatha, samadhi, and you don't know what they're talking about, and I'm afraid they don't know what they're talking about. So after you study it, you'll be able to tell. You'll study the actual differences between them. So I'll start you out on some of them. Gomba. If you have any inkling to learn a little, you can write it down. Some people in this class should be in the Tibetan class, but they don't want to fly. But I hope someday. Okay, the first word is Gomba. Say Gomba.
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 Gomba is a word that comes from kom, which is a different one. And it means to get used to something, to habituate yourself to something, to get used to something.
It comes from kom.
G-O-N. This is ga, this is ka.
So
you can't hear the difference.
Same.
I'll tell you, just to make it different for you, let's say komba. This is the word I want you to learn, this one here, gomba. Okay.
What does it mean?
Verb. The verb is gomgya, to do koma. Okay. This is the noun gomba, meditation. This is one of the five or six words for meditation I'm going to teach you tonight.
What does gomba mean?
This is what gomba means. Gomba means to get used to something by doing it over and over again. That's what gomba means. That's what the Tibetan word for meditation means.
Can we say habituation?
Bring that image up so often that it burns itself into your consciousness. And that it comes back easily to your consciousness. That's gomba. So gomba means habituation, and it means to bring an object to mind repeatedly until it gets fixed in the mind. And that's one taste of meditation. That's one meaning of it. So the general sense is that bringing the object to your mind again and again until it's burned into your mind or fixed in your mind. That's the most general word in Tibetan for meditation. Yeah. This is another word in Tibetan, which is the root of this word. And this word literally means to get used to something. Like komsha means, you know, I taught my puppy not to pee-pee on the floor. I have one nowadays in New Jersey, another one. And she's komba now to not pee-pee on the floor. That they'll say, that komsha. Now she's got used to it. She doesn't do it anymore. That's komsha. Or you can say, Chibu Yonin or Komsha, he has become accustomed to coming late. Did somebody open the door?
No.
Okay. Maybe Mel doesn't know how to do it. Is there anybody near the door?
No, he can hit one.
Okay. Make sure he has the right key for the second door.
The first and the second.
So this.
Something. Say something.
Something.
The Sanskrit word is dhyana. Samten is the name of the fifth of the six perfections. There are six perfections. What are they? Give me the first of anybody.
Generosity.
Giving.
Patience.
Morality.
Those Americans, morality. They don't need number two. Morality. Okay, giving, morality.
Patience.
Not getting angry. There is no English word for it, really. Number five? Four. Yeah. Effort.
Meditation.
Yeah, number five is meditation. Number six is wisdom. So this is the word for the fifth perfection, which is concentration or meditation. So see, you're going to get like five Tibetan words for the same thing. There are no English words for all these things. Samten means, first of all, it refers to the fifth perfection, which is meditation. Okay. The ability to concentration. Well, you'll learn what it is and you tell me.
Is dhyana like the five dhyani Buddhas?
They are called five dhyani Buddhas.
And does that mean five Buddhas in...
Yeah, why they're called that is a long story.
Okay.
Yeah. Usually I say long story when I'm not too clear about it myself. They know that. Okay, something. I've seen it somewhere. I don't remember what it said. There is an explanation somewhere. It's not what it sounds like. There's some. I remember it's not.
Usually follow back and look it up in the computer.
Yeah. That's
another. We'll get to it.
Fourth year, fifth class.
Okay. So something. There are also four levels of meditation called something.
Okay. Is this a subdivision of this or something else?
Well, it is the fifth perfection. But the same word is used to describe four levels of very deep meditation. Those four levels of deep meditation, the result of those four kinds of meditation are to be reborn in one of the four levels of the form realm. The form realm.
What?
Oh, I better go over this. There are three realms. Those are mental beings. They have no bodies. They're purely mental beings. They have no physical bodies. That realm is not located anywhere because they are wherever they think. All right? You can be here and be in a formless realm being could be in this room if his mind is here. Because that's the way they are. Yeah.
Can you be reborn where?
Wherever your mind is.
No, in the back to the four levels of the four.
Oh, the four levels of the form.
Four levels of the form.
Yeah, by doing the four kinds of something, those kinds of deep meditation, without any meaningful object. If it's just that you're hung up on those four, without any meaningful object, you will be born in one of those high deity realms. Can you guess why? What gets you into the high realms? Is great virtue. It's great good deeds. Good deeds are defined as avoiding bad deeds. Why do you think a person who's doing something his whole life would be avoiding bad deeds? He's not moving. And it's famous, and there's a kind of morality called some, you know, morality that's hooked to this. You can't do any verbal bad deeds because you can't talk and meditate at the same time. It's impossible. You can't do any physical bad deeds. You can't move and meditate at the same time. And you can't have any really bad mental bad deeds because your mind is single-pointedly fixed on a virtuous object. So they do have a great rebirth, but it doesn't last, and it's not desirable. And we'll get into that. Okay.
So
that's called dhyana.
Are you saying that's to be avoided then? Because, as you just said, you go to hell right afterwards? Or?
Well, that brings me to the next subject. If you want to see emptiness, although your body is in this desire realm, and although your basic mind state is a desire realm person's mind state, to see when you see emptiness, and you will see emptiness one day, directly, which is actually what stops all your suffering, the day that you see emptiness directly, your mind, your concentration is in the first samjhana. Your mind is not even in this realm. Your base mind is in this realm, but your concentration is actually on a higher level. And on that higher level, you have the ability to perceive emptiness.
Which realm would it be
then? The base mind, the supporting mental, the supporting brain, is in this realm. The body is in this realm. But the concentration is in a higher realm. So as you go into that meditation on emptiness for the first time, which if you can achieve it in this life is the greatest achievement you've ever... It's incredible. You feel a sense of going up to that realm, mentally. And in that realm you see emptiness. And then you come down out of that realm. And then you see what?
For noble truths.
You see the different parts of the four noble truths. This is the process. So your mind goes up to that level, the first samjhana. You see emptiness based on that level, and then you come down. Your mind comes down. You're sitting there, but you're not aware of your body. All right. So that's the general sense of samjhana. So if I ask you, there you should really say three kinds of samjhana, three meanings of samjhana. The first one is as the fifth perfection of the six Buddhist perfections. The second meaning is as that kind of meditation, which if it's all you do, you'll be reborn into the form realm as a deity. Yeah, F-O-R-M. So-called because they have beautiful bodies. And if you're... The third sense of samjhana is the important one. On the first samjhana level, with your mind in that level, you can see emptiness directly. Seeing emptiness directly functions to stop your suffering permanently. You no longer will need to get old, etc.
So really the third definition is a clarification of the second one?
They're all... Second one is the end of suffering. Third one is... Third one is the end of suffering. And the fourth one is the path that leads to that end.
Second one is?
Where the suffering comes from.
Cause.
The cause of suffering. Which is mainly your bad emotions. Hatred, jealousy, desire, anger. And our other close friends. Okay. Yeah, sure.
You said, and that's Diana.
Diana.
What part?
Do you have a Diana in
here? I heard everything else you said. I wrote it all down, but...
Well, the Sanskrit word is Diana.
Okay. Sanskrit?
Yeah, I'm trying to give you the Sanskrit words, because you will hear them. Okay. You've heard Dhyani Buddhas. You've heard Shamatha practice. You've heard Samadhi. I just want you to, you know, somebody says, what's shamatha? And what's the difference between shamatha and samadhi? You say, oh, I studied that.
So dhyana is the Sanskrit word for
something. Yeah.
Okay.
Or you should say Tibetan for Tibet. It's a translation. Yeah.
Could you also clarify again the three formless realms?
There's three realms. There's three realms of suffering beings. Okay. By the way, the Buddhists don't live in these three realms. These are the three realms of suffering beings. One realm you can see, it's the desire realm. That's where we live. That's this world that you know. You've never seen the other two realms. They are stated in Scripture. After you see emptiness directly, you will understand that those realms do really exist. You will experience them. Until that time, you can say, the Buddha said they exist. I've studied them in many authoritative scriptures. I can't tell you for sure if they exist. I haven't perceived them directly. The second realm is the form realm. You can't see. It's a meditation which is going to end you into the... It's going to make you reborn into the form realm. So in that sense, it's very similar to samatha. It's meditation which, if that's all you do, and Hindus, you know, saints do it, they just meditate on this kind of meditation. It's very high, it's a virtue. It's a goodness. It's a good deed. Mainly because you can't do any bad things if you're concentrating so strongly. You will be reborn in the form realm. That's one kind of yogi.
So this is your boss.
Yeah, I think so. Mostly. If he never did bad deeds to get his money.
Yeah.
But in the moments that he's concentrating on money, yeah, it's neutral. You know, he's not really hurting anybody. So that's... By the way, I don't really know who God knows. I don't know anyone's mind. He could be a Buddha. Sometimes I think he is. You know, we don't know. We have to be careful. I just use him as an example. Okay? I could use myself, but it's boring. Okay. Form realm better. You end up being born in the form realm. According to Buddhist scripture, I can't prove it to you. I can't even prove to you that it exists. And that's part of Buddhism. We have to admit what we can't see. The second kind of nyomjuk is the one that makes you born in the formless realm. The third kind of nyomjuk is called cessation meditation. Cessation meditation. And this is a state in which you can put yourself where your mind is almost shut down. And in some schools, it was believed that that was nirvana. That was the end of suffering. And we'll discuss it. It's not really. Your mind is still going on at a very, very subtle level. But the gross mind is almost shut down. And you can stay that way for a long, long, long time.
So when you say your mind, you're talking about...
52 functions of your mind, which we'll study later. Mainly sensation and discrimination. The ability to feel things and the ability to discriminate between different objects. Those are shut down to such a subtle level that it's close to nirvana. It is not nirvana. But it was taken to be nirvana, and it's called cessation meditation.
That's feeling and perception?
It actually shuts down all your mental processes to a very, very, very subtle level. But mainly those two. That's the big deal, because those are the two mental functions out of the 52 which get you in trouble. Okay. You like your friends, you don't like your enemies. You like what feels good, you don't like what feels good.
Sensation and what?
Sensation and discrimination. The ability to say, I like this person, I don't like this one. He's my friend, he's my enemy. This is warm, this is cold. Yeah.
Are you saying that this was mistaken for nirvana because it resembles nirvana, or because the people who mistook it for nirvana didn't understand nirvana and it doesn't resemble nirvana? Mainly, if you're not discriminating and you don't have sensation, that's attributes of nirvana?
No, but that's sort of close to being... There are Buddhist schools, which we talked about when we studied nirvana last time, which believe that when you achieve nirvana, your mind and your body are actually... discontinued. The word is discontinued. That's not wrong. That's not what the actual truth is. That's not what nirvana is. What is nirvana? Hey, definition of nirvana. You remember? How are you going to get there if you don't know what it is? Stopping what? Stopping?
Mental affliction.
Yeah. Oh, what was the rest of it?
In their entirety.
Yeah. Okay. It's stopping your bad thoughts, all of them, permanently, because you saw emptiness directly.
Because what?
Through seeing emptiness directly. As a result of seeing emptiness directly. That's the definition of nirvana. So you can achieve nirvana this evening. You look the same to me. You look the same to everybody else. You don't disappear. You know, there is another kind of nirvana, right? Where you do this. I mean, you get rid of the suffering body, but that's another story. Basically, nirvana means removing permanently your bad emotions, which would mean you'd never suffer again. So they mistook that for that. Yeah. There were schools of Buddhism that said nirvana was the discontinuation of your body and mind, which is not the case. There were lower schools that taught that. And that's what most Western people think when they hear nirvana.
So the earlier two were causal meditation because they cause rebirth in those two realms.
And the third is a kind of deep meditation.
It's a cessation meditation, but does it
it's
cause...
It's cessation, but it's not the truth of cessation.
You still have a rebirth. It still causes a rebirth.
Yeah, so it's not a real cessation.
It's still a causal meditation.
It's a cause of intent, but it's not a cause of...
Not the same cause,
Those are the ideas, the three ideas of Nyonjo.
Is there a rebirth associated with this meditation or no?
You would be reborn if that's all you did. It's not a, it doesn't get you to nirvana. It's not nirvana. It's not even cessation, it's concentration. Cessation. Okay. We got two more, then we'll take a break.
But there's nothing associated with that, like the others have, you call it causal.
I said there were three kinds of nirvana.
Yeah.
The first two we call causal, because they're called a high rebirth. The third one has nothing to do with the first two. The third one is a cessation nirvana. It's a Buddhist practice. You get so deep into meditation that your mind is almost shut down. You always see this in relation linked with this.
Is that the Sanskrit?
Yeah, I'll check my computer. It looks wrong. Don't think there's two pieces, but I'll check it for you. You almost always see shamatha connected with vipassana. In Thailand, it's called vipassana or something. Vipassana. That's more from the Pali. So they're all related. Same thing.
And they also use
Bhavana. Bhavana, yeah. Oh, yeah? Good. Okay. So if you want to get the flavor for this word for meditation, think of it in terms of a union between shamatha and vipassana. These two are always married. One of knowledge, which is seeing emptiness.
So this is not Vipassana meditation?
It is.
It is.
Well, that's a misnomer, see? And you'll have to study it.
Yeah, I'm confused about that.
We'll have to study it. We'll have to study it. That's why it's called Pakka. And we will study this. But you always see these two linked together. Okay? When you hear shamatha, you should think Vipassana. Because they are linked together. The goal, one of the highest goals is to have them linked together, is to have this incredibly powerful instrument focused on emptiness, wisdom.
And that's all it means.
Wisdom and beauty, yeah. I'll give you a definition sometime. But basically, this is what you're aiming for. This is the goal of your meditation. You want to reach shamatha. In and of itself, it's not such a big deal. You want it to be imbued with vipassana. You want to have wisdom that has this powerful ability to concentrate on emptiness. And that's what shamatha is. In its highest form. Right, there are many other forms, but this is the one that you're shooting for. Basically, these are the fifth and sixth perfections at their highest level.
What?
Fifth and sixth.
Perfections.
Meditation and wisdom. Those are the two highest forms of those two perfections. When you reach the two last perfections. That's what they would be.
So when you said the perfection of the perfection of...
Perfection is a difficult word. It doesn't mean the ultimate form of that thing. It means something else. It's Parotachimba. You've had Shirabhi Parotachimba. You know what it is. What is the perfection?
Tingen Zin.
Samadhi. Very famous, right? Very famous word. The definition, the broad definition, and I'm not giving you precise definitions, partly because I don't know them by heart, is Sechipa, Sem Sechipa, which means one-pointed mind, one-pointed state. I'm going to tell you what one-pointed means, because I wondered about it for years.
Pointed?
Okay, one-pointed state of mind. And I finally found these classical references. One-pointed means one object. The meaning, when they say in Buddhism, one-pointed state of mind, is one object. You're able to keep your mind on one object. Tightly. Strong. That's Tingen Zen. That's the definition of samadhi. It's just the ability to keep the mind on one object.
But how does that differ from shamatha?
We'll talk about it.
Shamatha is the king.
Are you going to give us a Sanskrit for that?
Yeah, it's samadhi.
Oh,
samadhi. D means mind, sama means equal. But we definitely do that. The Tibetan word is difficult to translate. Dinge means, like, wo ding ding means vivid green. It's a green which is pulsating, or it's a very rare, it's a very special word in Tibetan. When you're driving in Switzerland and you look over and there's one of these Swiss meadows with this incredible, vibrant green. This is called Motinge. So Tinge means like this incredible, vibrant color, usually. And Zin means to hold. So all these Tibetan words are very difficult to translate. Samten, they don't, you know, translators who don't know Tibetan very well struggle with the meanings of the units of the word. But they don't have any, they have a nice flavor, but they don't describe one-pointed mind. You see what I mean?
Samabodhi meditation, which we hear a lot. Which one?
I'm not going to touch all these English translations. I give up. Calm abiding is a translation of shine, which is shambhatar. And shi means peace and ne means to stay. It does not mean to put your mind in a nice, pleasant, buzzed out state. And that's why you got to be careful about that. Sham does mean peace. But it's a particular kind of peace. I would prefer that you think of shamatha as a powerful gun than as a cotton candy, you know. It's a very powerful weapon aimed at the right object. It's not like, hey, man, you know. And I'm afraid that the word is, you see, it's one of those old translations. It kind of tends to intimate that it's just a pleasant, peaceful, calm abiding. No, if anything, it's a fierce experience. It's a very powerful telescope aimed at a very... You want to get down on your knees in front of that thing. And that's just something that we'll talk about. Chöpa means offering. This is a mistake. I mixed up. The homework says don't mix up the 7 and the 6. I did. Scratch the first one. Sorry.
I ran out of paper.
I learned one thing.
Can I have a piece?
You know that the homework says don't confuse the 6 and the 7.
So you're just testing us to see if we knew the difference and we failed. Huh?
Yeah.
Is that one the 7?
It's one of the 7, but you're not going to do the 7 tonight. I just want you to know the 6.
And what is this, the 1 and the 2 of?
The 6 things that you have to do before you start meditating. And I messed up. I'm making it simple. It's a long sentence, but I'll explain it. Chepa is offering. Offering is a short word, but actually you set up an altar and you put out certain images and things like that, and then you put out some pretty offerings. And we'll talk about it.
quick.
Which one was it? Which one did you mean?
Chöpa.
You already write it in Tibetan? No.
Yeah.
Did you miss it? Chabdo means going for refuge. If you were in the last class, you did it. You know it well. And Semke, which is trying to develop the wish to become a Buddha so that you can help. It's the wish to become perfect so that you can help all beings. It's the wish to achieve your own paradise so that you can really help other people. That's sort of a pleasant task. It's not as nasty as it's achieve everything you ever wanted to help other people. That's okay.
First part's pretty good.
That's
yeah.
All right. And implied here, and you should write it in your homework, implied here is that you take the proper posture before you do that. So you're...
Meditation posture.
Yeah. You're sitting down the right kind of seat, and you're placing yourself on that seat in the proper position, and then you try to think these two things. So I didn't write out the whole thing because I didn't want to overwhelm
you. You try to think two things?
These two, taking refuge and bodhicitta. Oh. And that's expressed in the prayer that we do every class, before every class. You have that in your notebook. It has the same title at the top, Kyabdo
Sen. What was that word you said, bodhicitta?
Bodhicitta, which means Buddha mind, Bodhi mind, which does not refer, which the other students all know because they studied the definition. We did the whole thing. All right. Definition of it. Basically, the wish to achieve paradise yourself so that you can help others. So you can really be of some help to others. Because when you do that, you become omniscient. You know all the problems they're ever going to face in the next 50 years. And then you can really help them.
Sanje prakishashe metasham Rirang shinyam de yampati Sanje shindu mitte huwagi Jogunam da shimba